Hi, I'm Kristina Klimas, and we are on the podcast Building Digital Products, where we speak about the technology that can boost your business here and now. And our today guest is Gary Palmer. Gary is an expert of financial tech with over 28 years of experience. He was the one at the origins of prepaid cards in the USA and co-founder of Wildcard Systems, which sold for $262 million. Later, Gary helped to sell it again for $1.8 billion to Fidelity National Information Services. Now Gary Palmer is founder, chairman, and CEO at Payal, a category-defining banking infrastructure provider for safe, transparent, and efficient worldwide cross-border payments. Hello, Gary.
Hi, Christine. It's nice to meet you. Just to be clear, when I sold my first company, we sold it to a large public company called eFunds. And you're right, it was $262 million. And then we sold eFunds to FIS for $1.8 billion. And so it wasn't just my company. It was a part of a larger company, but it was still a great transaction and great experience.
Oh, thank you for this remark. So I will start my questions. And my first question is, having worked in the fintech and bank tech industry for 28 years, do you believe a company launched only a few years ago can still succeed in this highly competitive payment company market?
I do. It comes down to a couple of very simple requirements. The first is they have to be solving a really big problem and a problem that's important for their customers to solve. If you're not solving a big problem, adding a lot of value, or doing something that's important to your customer, you'll never get scale. The second part is you have to have enough capital to make sure you get through the early phases of building the product, signing up your first customers, getting adoption, and getting scale. If you can accomplish those two things, plus a lot of other smaller things, yeah, there's still great opportunity in fintech.
I agree with you, but sometimes it's difficult to identify market gaps before starting your own company. And my next question is, did you rely on focus group conversations with financial industry colleagues or other stakeholders, or do you have your own methods when you need to identify these market gaps before starting the company?
So, Christina, you're right. It's not always easy to identify a gap or a need. And in fact, it even gets more complicated because sometimes we think we know what the market needs and we build a product and it either doesn't work as expected or doesn't solve the problem as expected or the problem changes. And so you have to be able to pivot. In my case, when I started Wildcard Systems, it was actually because of personal experiences where I had experienced an insurance claim, a homeowner's claim, and the process with my insurance company was really bad. And I had this idea that instead of the process I went through with the insurance company, if they had given me a card, say a Visa card or a MasterCard, and allowed me to replace the items that were affected by this claim, rather than putting me through the process they put me through, which was replacing everything that had been stolen, it would have been a better experience for me. And at the same time, my thesis was that they could still harness their buying power and they could still get the benefit of not executing the claim process with just cash, but they could harness their buying. In other words, it would still solve the same problem for them, but make the user experience better for me. So the fact is, that was the first idea for using prepaid cards. But as soon as I began speaking to banks and began speaking to others, I realized the opportunity was much bigger than just insurance claims. And so in the very early days, created this idea that in the prepaid card industry, there would be consumer-funded prepaid cards for things like gift cards and remittances and teen cards, government-funded prepaid cards for benefits and social benefits and expenses and that sort of thing, and then business-funded prepaid cards for incentives, rebates, salaries, and all of that. So from one idea, from a very personal experience, I was able to, through interacting with others, and it wasn't really focus groups, it was really just listening to to customers and interacting with people, identified there was a much broader opportunity set for a prepaid card platform. And remember, this is way back in 1996, 97. There was no such thing as a prepaid card. There were debit cards, there were credit cards, and there was a lot of craziness happening in the internet space at the time. But building a new card issuing platform for banks was not something I had on my radar before I started my company.
Yeah, I understand. When we were researching the interview for you and while trying to understand more about your business, so we saw that your business philosophy is to look for big problems and fix them. And can you explain how you ensure that your banking and fintech products continuously adapt to the changing needs, desires, and expectations of users? I think that it's not so easy.
No, it's an excellent question. And you're right. The idea for starting a new company, building a new product, starts with fixing a problem. But it's an excellent observation that it has to fix the problem or add value for everybody in the ecosystem. So we have to start with the customer experience, whoever's using the product, and is it really making a difference in their life or in their business? Now, in my companies, I've always built software for banks. So I have a B2B customer, and then they have a B2C customer. And I have to imagine how our product will solve problems for the banks as well as for their end users. And it's a constant process of validating and revalidating and testing every thesis you have about the problem you're solving. And it's not one, like I say, that you get right the first time. And sometimes it's required to pivot or adjust the business model or adjust the technology in order to continue solving the problem.
Yeah, I think that customer experience is really difficult when you don't work in this industry and you need to understand whether your product solves the problem of the customer or no. And it might be challenging. And maybe have you ever faced some problems with it when you thought that you understand the problem and then it came out that you don't?
Absolutely. Let me say that one of my philosophies for building product is, and I think this might be true across any type of product category, at least it's my view, every product has to be easy to buy and easy to use. And many times we have built products that at some part in the delivery, it wasn't easy to use. So let me give you an example. Back to our very first use case for prepaid cards, which was insurance claims. And so the idea was we were going to make it easy for an insurance company to offer, say, a Visa card or a MasterCard, a prepaid Visa card or MasterCard after a natural disaster, a hurricane, a flood, or some disaster situation, so that instead of carrying cash and checks, they could carry prepaid cards and deliver them. At the same time, it had other use cases in the insurance industry. And so and this is really an informative experience that I've taken throughout my entire career, and I'm applying what I failed to do in my first company today. In my first company, I thought, I'm just going to give these insurance agents this really easy website they can use where they can take the card, it's a B2B website, out of their pocket or purse or wallet, or briefcase or bag, and they can give it to the recipient and they can associate a human with that card and they can load value on it through this really cool website, a B2B website. The problem with that is from the customer's experience, from the end user's experience, getting the card would have been easy. It would have solved the problem. But what I failed to understand is that insurance agents and those in the field delivering this type of aid, they don't have a computer, and smartphones weren't really big then. And so we had to find a way to integrate into their existing business processes rather than give them something that was outside of that business process. And so we may have solved the problem in a great way for the consumer, but we failed to solve the problem for the guy who's actually delivering the card. So now in my current company, we actually automate business processes that today are manual from beginning to end in the value chain. So I've been able to take those early learnings and failings and apply them throughout my career.
Yeah, but I think that we should make mistakes to have to be more experienced. Yeah, maybe it's a cliche, but it's true. Yeah, and when you were telling it, I think that it's important to remember about your stakeholder and try to not to be to provide a great service for everyone. So everyone should be motivated in using your product, not only the end customers. And sometimes it could be a challenge also.
And you're right, Christina. And a part of every new company and new product is you're not going to get it right the first time. We are going to make mistakes. The product will need to be adjusted. How we deliver it may need to change. The pricing may need to change. So there are many variables. And I think that the most successful entrepreneurs are really good at quickly identifying gaps or issues in their product and adapting to fix and overcome them. And this is, it's really important for entrepreneurs to keep that in mind, is that you can't just hold on to an idea without considering all of the factors, all of the feedback you get from others who are using it. It's a part of the process of product development, is failing, making mistakes, learning and adapting.
Yeah, totally agree. And I think that also the great quality could be flexibility, because you should be always flexible for new changes, for new technologies, for the time when you will see the feedback from your clients and you are so shocked because you don't think that they can face such problems. Yeah,
you're right. I had one other personal experience in my first company that was really, really informative. When we launched with Standard Bank of South Africa prepaid cards, we launched them for travel purposes. So the idea was, if someone was leaving South Africa and traveling abroad, they could go to a Standard Bank branch, convert their local currency, the Rand, to USD or Euros. It's loaded on the card. And now when they're traveling, they're able to make purchases at restaurants, make purchases at hotels, pay for certain trip expenses without carrying traveler's checks. Because that was really the alternative way at the time, were these old-fashioned paper traveler's checks. And so if someone wanted to budget their travel and they didn't have an international debit card or credit card, again, way back in the early 2000s, a Visa travel money card was amazing. So we launched this product. It's all about travel. And we were like, woohoo, this is going to be great. Well, about a year into it, we actually surveyed the customers and we actually found we had three different customer profiles. Yes, about a third of the population used the card for travel, but another third used it for family remittances. They were family members who had children going to university abroad, and they would give their son or daughter this card to pay for things when they were abroad. And then anytime they ran out of money, they would go down to the bank and reload the card. So it's sort of fascinating that was the other use case. And then the third use case was people, when they would get paid, they would rush to the bank and they would convert their local currency, the Rand, to USD and loaded on the card. Now, why would they do that? Because the local currency was getting weaker and weaker and weaker. And mm-hmm. So the card was a hard currency hedge against the local following currency. So this is an example where an entrepreneur may have a great idea for a product and it solves one problem, but when it gets in the hand of the customers, it can be a big dud and fail, or they may find other ways to use that product to solve other problems in their life. And again, as an entrepreneur, we should keep an open mind to that and leverage that and build that into our next product.
Yeah, I totally understand you. And I think that deep interview can really help when you try to identify those type of users and try to understand which user is connected to this group or to this group. And you see some behavior patterns that they are using, and you can use it in your business with a very great result in the future.
That's right.
Yeah, and my next question is, in your current role at Payal, what performance and tech metrics do you monitor, and why are they crucial? And how do these metrics define your company's success?
So it's a great question, and we're still an early stage company. We don't have hundreds of customers. We have a number of financial institutions. So we deliver software, or we deliver the ability for banks, other forms of financial institutions, EMIs, PIs, to have a better than fintech, a better than big bank product for cross-border payments. So many banks, many EMIs, many financial institutions really struggle giving their customers the ability to make cross-border payments because they can't find a correspondent bank, or working with correspondent banks are difficult. So within our business, we have a number of metrics that we use, all the way from how we're building product and how we're measuring the quality of the code we deploy and how many bugs we have and how long it takes to fix them and how the product we deliver matches what we defined. And we've been building products since 2008 and releasing it for, you know, every month or two we do releases. And so there's nothing special, Christina, about sort of classic product development and metrics that we're using for developing our product. And the same on the operations side. We have classic metrics regarding technical operations, I should say, the speed at which our system responds to API calls through the internet, the speed at which we process a transaction, the number of failed transactions, system uptime, all the classic metrics that are a part of a bank tech company or a fintech company are baked into our business. What is really important, it's our culture. You can have the best metrics, the best dashboards, be monitoring all of the right things. But if your people, if your employees don't have the right mindset about putting customers first, about making sure that we're always guided by this mission of solving very important, very big problems for our customers, and doing it in a way that others either can't, won't, or don't, you can have the best metrics in the world, but you lose your edge. You lose your ability to be relevant and important to your customers. So I would say that having great metrics, great dashboards, great KPIs to make sure the business is operating correctly, it's important, and you can find those. But the most important thing is building a culture where everyone in the company understands that we're in this to solve big problems for our customers. And they're at the top of our org chart, not the CEO. Where our customers are at the top of our org chart and we're serving them. It's not the other way around. So I would say this is, for me, certainly it's who I am as a person, and it's in our company, that putting customers at the center of everything we do is our culture, and it's how we build all of our other metrics we build metrics around delighting our customers.
Yeah, and it's, I think, the right strategy because it's the goal of the business. So my next question is, with the start statistic that over 75% of fintech startups fail, what are your top three pieces of advice to new startup founders and product managers to avoid failure?
It goes back to what we started with in the beginning. You have to solve a big problem, and it has to be a problem that your customers care about and you're really able to add value. The second part is making sure you have enough capital to get to market, because this goes to the third point, is you've got to get scale. You've got to get some customers and user experience, reference customers and feedback, so that other investors understand and can see, rather, that you have good product market fit. So those are the three, in my mind, the most important things. Make sure that you're really solving a big, important customer for your product. Make sure you've got enough money to build the product and get some customers live, and make sure you've got great product market fit and good metrics around that, because then you can grow and finance the business.
I think that there are these types like as a crucial for the startup founders. So I think that someone who will watch this episode lately maybe will have a look at it and can use it in their own startups.
Well, I hope it's helpful. I just want to be helpful. I don't know everything. I make a lot of mistakes still today, but I certainly hope some of your listeners can hear something of value here that resonates with them.
And the last one from this section, about your collaboration with MasterCard in April 2023, a major industry player. So my question is, what guidance would you offer to fintech companies seeking to establish such impactful partnership with industry giants? such as MasterCard?
Christine, it's a really, really good question. And many times, really big companies, whether it's a big bank or some other enterprise, they're good at what they do, and they have, you know, they're big and they're successful because they're good at what they do, and they've got great talent and great people and great systems. But many times there are little gaps inside the business that are not prioritized within the company itself. Either there aren't enough resources, or it's not high enough in the prioritization list. But it's a gap that, if you fill it, you make their product better, you make their offer better, you make them more successful. And so that is my suggestion, is that when you're working with really big companies, they're really, really great partners. Find a way to make their company and their product better and focus on that and make sure that they are a part of the process and they agree. I can say candidly, we had great ideas for how we could help MasterCard XBS, MasterCard Cross Border Services, become a better product and easier for banks and EMIs and PIs to adopt. But during our process of working with MasterCard, we took so much great feedback from them, and we were able to incorporate their ideas. And so this is another very important point. If you're selling to a very big company, make sure you're solving an important problem for them, but also take their feedback. Sometimes entrepreneurs, and I can be guilty of this, we get stubborn, or we think we have all of the answers because we're more nimble and more fast. But the fact is that great ideas, critical feedback can come from anyone, anywhere. And when you're working with a large, very sophisticated partner like MasterCard, it's important to listen to them and to respect their ideas and incorporate that into how you're working with them. So those are some of the more fundamental suggestions I would have when you're working with a very big partner.
Yeah, and I think that it's an advantage to work with such giant as MasterCard, because they have like lots of the roles at their company, and you can really learn something from the professionals. Yes, so sometimes they have like really important role for customer experience, customer success, and so on and so forth.
Christina, the only word of caution is that sometimes a small company can be so enamored, or they see big stars or big dollar signs or big euro signs from working with a big company. They don't always set boundaries or create good conditions for success. So one of the other suggestions I would have is that when you're working with a big partner like that, make sure you set boundaries, because you can be sucked into a vortex of helping them where you run out of money or you run out of resources, that you can't work on other things. And so it's both setting boundaries around how you're going to engage, as well as agreeing on what does success look like and what happens when we're successful. These are some subtle points that are really important, especially when you're working with a big company that could be all-consuming if you're not careful.
Yeah. And I think that you need to prioritize like projects when you are working with different companies, because sometimes you can, like, as you mentioned, pay attention only to the major project and lose like every other at your company. And we can switch to another section, which is called flash questions. I will tell you like two options and you need to pick only one. Are you ready?
Okay.
Great. Cooperate with good workers or leaders?
Leaders.
Creative or data-driven decision?
Wow. Creative.
Is that result or the process that matters?
Result.
Working or giving advice?
Working.
That is all for today. Thank you, Gary, for coming to our show. It was really interesting to speak with you, and you have a positive energy. I think that it's great for recording the podcast, because you sparked my day, and it was a pleasure speaking with you.
Christine, it's very nice speaking with you, and I'm humbled by your kind words and compliments. Thank you very much for your time.
Hit the like and subscribe button to not skip the following episodes. Bye.